Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Must be a Friday if Bill Rock's doing that introduction. Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning, Sean. How are you?
I couldn't be better, and you're looking well.
In fact, you any day I get up is a good day.
Okay, good deal.
Listen, although it gets harder as you get older, well, as you well know.
You don't have to talk to me about that, doing what I do when I do it. Last Friday here, you talked about in the wake of the Aurora shooting, and you said that President Obama and Mitt Romney should come out and tell us what they think. Are you satisfied with what you heard or didn't hear?
Well, they said that... it was a tragedy, and the president did what his job requires him to do in terms of expressing the country's remorse, and I think he did that well. And Governor Romney said the similar kinds of things appropriately, but neither addressed the fundamental issue. And if you think about it, 48,000 people are going to get killed during the next presidential term. You would think that they would have a plan that they would be willing to discuss, promote, be proud of, to stop that kind of carnage. If it was a disease that was found that was going to kill 48,000 people in the next 4 years, they would be all over it. They're going to do this, they're going to do that, raise money, start this program, whatever, however that they want to approach it. And I think it's fair to say that neither has said anything concrete as to what we can do to stop, just not the next Aurora, because Aurora is one time 50 people shot, 12 people killed. We kill 34 a day in this country. Every day, 34 people around the country. Every one of them, most of them have families and loved ones, and you'd think that they would say how they're going to do something about it, but they have not yet. Let's hope they do.
The rest of Washington, Harry Reid, John Boehner, Nancy Pelosi, the list goes on and on and on. All of them said yesterday when asked about this, we will not be part of our discussion.
They have to look in a mirror and decide what they think is right, and you should ask them why they are unwilling to address one of the big issues that we face in this country. In New York State, in all fairness, we have the toughest gun laws in the country. It's mandatory 3.5 years if you get caught with a illegal loaded gun. And in fact, people do go to jail. If you remember, one of the football players went to jail. It was controversial, but if you're going to send somebody who nobody's ever heard of before to jail, you should send people who we look to as role models. And I think he regretted what he did, and he's tried to make up for it and become a good citizen afterwards, and that's fine. You know, if you get a penalty, you do something wrong, you pay your dues, then you should be welcome back, and he is. And hopefully he can help teach others to not do the same thing. But we keep bringing crime down. We are on track to set a new low record for murders, the lowest we've ever had. We're 20% better than last year, and 20% better than the year before, and 10% better than the year before that. We got to keep working to stop the carnage on our streets, and nobody should suggest that we found all the solutions or that we are perfect. But this is a national problem, and we don't need a lot of new laws. We need to reinstate the law that prohibits having assault weapons. You only buy an assault weapon if you want to kill people. It is not used to kill animals, not used for target practice or anything else. There's literally no reason to have a gun. Think about it. And yet some people are violently opposed to a ban on assault weapons. Romney had signed a bill in Massachusetts, which he lauded, that banned assault weapons, and President Obama campaigned that he would pass a national law or try to get Congress to do it, and then has done nothing since then. So both of them have walked away from it, and you can speculate as to why. I don't know that that's terribly important. The real answer is if they want to be leaders, they should stand up, lead from the front, and they say, or their political aides say, oh, you know, the polls are terrible on doing this. Can you imagine if you asked either of these guys, should you be leading from the front or are you just going to do polls and following? I don't think they'd say the second. I think, oh, yes, I'm going to be a leader. I'm going to do what's right. Well, here's a chance to show it.
Or,
and save lives.
Or could you look? Could you say to a family, a mother or a father or whomever who just had some family member shot and killed? Well, the poll said that we shouldn't be. You know, we shouldn't.
I talked to the mother of the 4-year-old who was shot in a random shooting a couple 3 days ago. You know, what do you say? I think if some of these leaders had to really talk to the parents and explain their position, they'd have a much tougher time, and maybe they'd vote differently. That's certainly true for the legislators at the state and federal level. My first responsibility is do what's right for New York City, and unfortunately, guns come from all over the country into New York City, which is why you speak out on a nationally about it. I don't think that New York should tell other states what to do with their gun laws. But there was a movement in Congress to pass a law that every state would have to recognize every other state's gun laws, which meant if you have one state that has no restrictions, you could carry a gun any place in any state. And Scott Brown is a senator from Massachusetts who I don't agree with on an awful lot of things, but he bucked his party. He stood up, and he was one of those that kept that law from going in. He really was one of the key votes in
it. And you're going to support him.
Absolutely. This guy has saved a lot of lives in New York City, because if that law had been passed, it just would have been chaos. Okay, Kelly, in our police department, what do they do? There's no laws that prevent everybody from having a gun? And Brown stood up. So, yes, I don't agree with him. He's not good on other things that I would like. He's not good on guns generally. But this was something that was really critical, saving a lot of lives, and that's what I think you should give support to, people that do the right thing. And he did, and it was courageous. He had to stand up against his party. There are very few people doing that.
We had that unfortunate 4-year-old killed 3 or 4 days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago, we had 5 people shot at a basketball game in Harlem. And after those 2 events, we saw some New York City politicians sort of change their tune on stop and frisk and what the police department do.
Look, it would be great if we didn't have guns. That's not going to happen. But if we have them, we've got to find ways to get them off the streets. And primarily, you do that by making the people who would like to carry them on the streets realize that they run a risk in doing so. They're likely to be stopped and frisked and arrested if they have a gun. Therefore, they don't carry a gun. Somebody said, well, you're not getting as many guns as you used to when you're stopping frisking. Yeah. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we didn't ever find a gun? That's all the more reason to keep it going, not to walk away from it. And we just have to do something about this. And I think it would be we'd work hard to try to teach every police officer to, when they stop somebody, do it with respect. You know, keep in mind, it's easy for you and I to say anything. You're out on the streets, and sometimes there are gangs out there, bad people, and cops have to make split decisions, and they don't always do it right. They're human beings like everybody else, and we have 35,000 uniform cops out there doing it, and a lot of undercover cops out there. But, you know, they do a pretty good job, and the results of fewer murders are clear. If you go back, if we had not brought the murder rate down in the last 10 years, but we had just kept it, Giuliani had brought it down during his administration a lot. If we just kept that level, today there'd be 6,000 families that have lost somebody in the last 10 years that now today did not because of that. And hopefully whoever comes after this administration will continue, take what we did and build on that the way we built on what Giuliani did and keep it coming down. You have to be free from worry when you walk the streets. If you don't do that, nobody's going to have a business here. Nobody's going to go to school here. Nobody's going to get medical care here. We're not going to have a tax base. And we're not going to be able to help those that we want to help or enjoy life ourselves. The basic civil right is to be able to go out and be safe. Then you can go to the polling booth and exercise that franchise. Then you can go to the corner and speak and say what you want to say. Then you can go to your place of worship. And all of those things we value. But if you can't walk in the streets, they're meaningless.
Mr. Mayor, sit tight. Let me take a break real fast here. 18 minutes now after 8 o'clock, and I'll also invite all of you, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, at the end of the program, we will get to you. 800-321-0710 is the number. The time to get in line is now. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
Hi, this is Doc.
Re-roof. Want you to call Susan at Super Shield, the amazing cool roof coating that's less expensive, has a 10-year warranty. It's going to save you money and energy, too, on heating and cooling bills. Call today for a free estimate, 1-877-RHINO-08. That's 1-877-RHINO-08. 877-744-6608.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
And the Mayor's Hour brought to you by Ray Catena Motor Car Corporation. Experience the legend in luxury. Route 1 North Edison, Ray Catena of Union, Route 22 West. Stop in today. Take advantage of all the terrific programs and lease specials. All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here 21 minutes after 8 o'clock on this Friday. I'm curious, as Mayor of New York, what you think of some of your compatriots. San Francisco Mayor Edwin Lee. You've got Tom Menino, the Boston mayor, mm-hmm. as well. And, of course, you got Rahm Emanuel, all up in arms over Chick-fil-A.
Well, I think all three are good mayors. Tom has really been the impetus with...
he's been with you a lot on this.
On guns. He deserves an enormous amount of the credit. I seem to get the NRA ire, but Tom Menino deserves some, too, because he's been out front and he really does the right thing. And Rahm is struggling with crime, as you know, in Chicago, but he's... coming in, and he's done a good job, and Lee, the same thing. They're all sort of friends. Not sort of. They're our friends. But I disagree with them really strongly on this one. You can't have a test for what the owner's personal views are before you decide to give a permit to do something in the city. You really don't want to ask political beliefs or religious beliefs before you issue a permit. That's just not government's job. And no matter how much you dislike somebody else's views, think about what would happen in the cities where the views are on the other side. So, the liberals say, oh, we don't want this real conservative guy in here. A lot of cities have conservative mayors and populations. They're not going to let a liberal guy.
If we start picking and choosing winners because of political and personal beliefs, I mean, we got a disaster.
Nobody's a bigger supporter of same-sex marriage. I just don't think it's the government's business, period. You should be able to marry whoever you want. But a store, if you're going to start doing a test as to whether or not the store owner is in favor or against same-sex marriage, number one, nobody's going to want to be in your city, and number two, freedom of speech, everybody's in favor of it, as long as it's what they want to hear. Well, the only ways you have your freedom of speech is if you give other people freedom of speech, and this is just a bad idea, and it's not going to happen in New York City.
So Chick-fil-A, New York City's...
If they want to open a store, there's permitting, and, they got to find a space and clear it with the buildings department, the health department, get a grade for their food, hopefully, and put it up. And
great chicken sandwiches. Great chicken sandwiches.
Never had one. I didn't even know about them until I read about them in the paper. It's just... It's inappropriate for a city government or a state government or the federal government to look at somebody's political views and decide whether or not they can live in the city or operate a business in the city or work for somebody in a city.
In your view, is this an offshoot, an outfalling of the stagnation and the partisanship that we seem to see grow?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think... What you do see is more government, the people who talk about big government, they sort of talk up to, in my way of thinking, about the wrong thing, because we want government to provide a lot of services, and in this day and age, world's much more complex and global, so you do need a lot more government. That means employees and regulations and that sort of thing. Where government really is too big is when government starts to trample on people's freedoms. And trampling on the freedom to marry whoever you want is exactly the same as trampling on your freedom to open a store. And it's just that it's that kind of belief that the government should be involved in everything and that we should have litmus tests for people's views. And I don't think the founding fathers thought about that. In fact, here you have the ACLU. out there protecting Chick-fil-A's right to open a store. In this case, they happen to be right. I think a lot of the stuff, I don't agree with the ACLU on a lot of things, but in this case, they happen to be right. It's people's freedoms. I just think that when the ACLU, a lot of times, when they think it's people's freedoms, they're not. For example, you have to make some decisions in policing and that sort of thing, and you have to be practical, and you don't have the right to stand up, which I guess they would say they agree with. You don't have a right to stand up in a movie theater and yell fire as a joke. You also don't have a right to have a gun and start killing people in a theater. And those are restrictions that are appropriate and reasonable, particularly in the complex world we live in. But this one, I'm not sure why these three mayors, who really are good mayors, I just disagree with them, I guess, is the way to say it.
For those that might, after what you've just said, say, hey, wait a minute, you know, you want to tell us what size cup we can drink in. How do you
balance that? We're not telling you what size cup. We're telling the stores what size cups they can use. And not the stores, the restaurants. And
correct.
Stores we have nothing
right.
to do with. Restaurants. And that, but we have regulations all the time, John. You want to drive a car. You got to get a license. You got to have insurance. You know, you got to obey the law of stopping at red lights. Come on, if somebody is going to, if there's asbestos in a building, we take you out. We have laws on smoking. We have laws on how many drinks, alcohol. You regulate alcohol. A bartender, when you're drunk and a bartender sells you another drink, and you go out and kill somebody in your automobile, bartender can be liable. So we've long ago crossed that bridge. It's a question of being appropriate, and I just think that. If you violate a law, a labor law or a discrimination law, that's one thing. But if, and you don't have to shop in a store that you don't agree with their political views, that's up to you. But for the government to start having this litmus test on purity of thought, if you will, before granting you a license, that's just not something.
But it's political expediency would be can be the only motivation behind it, right?
You know, look, I don't know. I haven't talked to Tom or to Rahm or to our great mayor in San Francisco, who I've gotten to know. He gave me a dozen golf balls.
Well,
I lost them all very quickly. It was before he became mayor. At least a good mayor. But none of those guys have a serious threat. They're not doing this for political reasons, I assume. You have to ask them. I don't know.
All right. Well,
I just think they're wrong.
I couldn't agree
with
you.
And we're not going to do it in New York.
I couldn't agree with you more. Let's see here. Let's see what time we have here. A judge has sided with the arbitrator in the school
closing
question.
Well, we'll go to another. You know, the appeals court, you can't get to them until like November or something.
Yeah, so
the bottom line is another year, 30,000 kids are going to get a terrible education, and they will never recover from this for the rest of just history shows it is so hard in education. If you get behind, almost always there are exceptions, but almost always you're permanently behind. And these are schools that our state Board of Regents said should not be operating the way they are. They should be closed, phased out. There are a variety of different things. I cannot understand what this arbitrator was thinking about. He should look in a mirror because he has hurt 30,000 kids. In the contract, you have the right to do something. He says, well, I don't trust your motives, therefore. We think that that's against the law, that he doesn't have the right to do that. This judge took 5 minutes to make a decision, and then she went on vacation, from what I'm told. Our kids are on vacation. When they go back, however, they're not going to get a vacation, and we're going to appeals court.
But again, as you say, there's nothing you can do for this year, this coming
year.
No,
we got in the end,
you
have to obey the law.
Weeks.
But yeah. We are going to change as many things in those schools as we can.
What sort of things are there?
Well, you can change programs. You can change the management in some cases. You can do things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're going to really focus on them. We've got to do everything we can for those 30,000 kids to try to ameliorate the damage. But in the end, education is about a good, caring, competent, well-trained, well-managed teacher at the front of the room and in front of the kids. And the Board of Regents says that's not what you have. This is not us doing it. This is the State Board of Regents. Report to, I guess, you know, the governor and the legislature, and it's a state body, and they say you got to do something, so we're trying to do it, and then all of a sudden, you know, get stopped by the union, and they've won a couple of battles, and we'll see. They should be ashamed. This is as bad as their defense of people, you know, sexually abuse kids or take advantage of kids. You know, if a kid doesn't get an education, their whole life is going to be changed. Their ability to feed themselves and their family and enjoy what's great about America. This is not a game, and the education system shouldn't be run for the people that work in it. It was supposed to run this for the kids. And when you have schools that have single-digit proficiency, you know, 8% of the kids can read, 8% of the kids can do math.
Any other business would be out of business.
Every other business, and you should be out there leading. You have the
I do.
You have a bully pulpit.
Trust
you
can, me.
You
can I'm there on an almost daily basis. 8:31 is our time, Mr. Mayor. We'll let Joe Bartlett do a little work here. The Mayor's Hour is brought to you by Racatina Motor Car Corporation. Experience the legend in luxury. Route 1 North, Edison, or Racatina of Union, Route 22 West. Stop in today. Take advantage of all the terrific programs and lease specials. You got a nice little present. The city got a nice little present this week. The Highline, the CSX Corporation.
CSX, which is a big railroad company. You see their names on the side of all these boxcars and engines. I think they might be the biggest now. In the country, they owned, because of mergers, the High Line itself, and they just turned over to the city. I don't know if we paid a dollar or zero, but whatever. The last third of the High Line, which will now take the High Line from the new Whitney Museum that's being built, right by Diane von Furstenberg's store. You should see her business is fun. She's great in her business. That whole area, the commerce down there, art and clothing and whatever, all the way up to the railroad yards where Related is going to build new buildings on a platform over the railroad yards. And so now you can go. It'll go all the way up there.
And it you can only walk on it, right? I mean, there's no transportation, bikes.
No, but if bikes? You have a wheelchair, it is handicap accessible.
All right, but other than that, yeah. And it's been wildly successful.
Off the charts. I mean, you know, millions of people. I had a million the first year or something. And it is rain or snow or sleet or snow or hot or whatever. People love it. They go up there and they walk. You get a great view. And you remember only a couple blocks away from another one of the great parks, the Hudson River Park, which goes from the 50s all the way down to Battery Park, basically. And that has all sorts of that's where you bicycle. That's where you rollerblade and skateboard and play beach volleyball, and you know they have all sorts of stuff and kayaking and all that stuff. The High Line is for sitting, contemplating, walking, holding hands, and lots of people want to do it.
The bike sharing program, you mentioned bikes.
It's software.
Really?
Somebody, yeah, one newspaper wrote a story. You're not telling us enough. There's nothing. The software doesn't work. The company that's managing it changed vendors to have new software. New software. And it just doesn't work yet. We're not going to put it in until we do. And here, think about the craziness. Everybody was screaming, we do not want bicycles. Now everybody's screaming, we can't get them fast enough. You got to love New York.
You and John Liu, the comptroller of the city, together at some meeting, I think it was on Monday, retroactive pay to school employees.
Financial Control Board, which came out of the...
Big
Mac financing in the 70s, when the state bailed out the city when it was almost bankrupt. John mentioned one of the risks to our budget was retroactive pay. And we have a lot of risks in the budget. There's always risks in a budget. You're counting on revenue, which may or may not be there. You don't know whether the economic level, the big variable is taxes. Very hard to predict what the economy is going to do next year, and that's influences the tax revenue you're going to have. Your expenses tend to be predictable and fixed. It's the revenue side that varies. And it's not, every once in a while you get a surprise, a court decision against you or something, you get sued, or a disaster and you have to respond. But generally, we can predict our expenses. It's guesswork. That's what you do. You guess. You take your best guess. And in the city, we use outside experts to estimate what our tax revenue is going to be, because you don't want us cooking the books to... You want to have a realist. Doesn't mean they're right, but at least it's independent and from people whose job it is. Now, economists' job it is to predict the future. It's
good
like
luck.
The weatherman, the job is to predict the future. You know, you can't get it right all the time. or even majority of the time. But in this case, you know, people say, oh, well, the union contracts have run out. That's not really true. We have something called the Taylor Law. The Taylor Law says that the city must continue on at the with the old contract until a new contract is signed. But there is a contract covering all of this period. It specifies what you can do and what your responsibilities are and what the city's responsibilities are and how much you get paid and how much the city has to pay. And so people say there's no no contract. That's not true. Some unions think, well, I should have gotten a raise back then. You know, should have, would have, and could have. Some unions got raises when their when we negotiated new contracts with them, and it was boom times, and money was coming in more than we had expected, and you could be more generous and raise their salaries. Then some unions wanted to stretch out their contracts, and unfortunately they moved them into a period after the mortgage crisis when the city just didn't have the money. And as you know, we've had since then, each year we've been cutting back our expenses to balance the budget. You can't raise taxes, you'll drive people out of the city. And we're going to have to do more of that for next year. And if some of the things we counted on this year don't come through, we're going to be in a tougher situation, and we're going to meet that the obligations. We're going to find ways to cut our expenses, and we're going to keep the city going and keep it safe and keep the schools improving. You know, you take a look at our municipal employees. They would all like to make more. So would you. So would I. That's reasonable and normal. But the city only has so much money, and we're not in trouble like some of these other cities. We have very big expenses. We are a high tax place, but we get great people working for the city. If we're in a hiring mode, we can hire as many people as we want. People from around this country want to come to work here. And that's one measure of whether you're paying a reasonable amount. I don't know what fair means, but you got to decide what is a reasonable amount. And one of the ways to do that is you look at comparables in the surrounding area. Our police, fire, teachers are paid well compared, particularly if you include benefits, they're paid very well compared to the comparable areas around. And also whether or not you can attract new people. Those are the only ways you can decide what is an appropriate level to pay your employees, because the city taxpayers would always like to pay less, and the employees would always like to get more. And that's both of those are natural things. So how do you do this? How do you come up with a reasonable number? Those two things. And so some that didn't get raises, that there's no ways after this administration's gone that the next administration could come in and retroactively give monies. The numbers would be so staggering, you'd have to double your property taxes or raise them big percentages. And I don't think the public would stand for that. I don't think the city council would do it, and they'd have to vote it.
Some people that would like your job, or at least maintain that they would like your job, have suggested that with the whole crime situation on the streets, the stop and frisk question, more cops. Cop level is down probably as low as it's, I don't know, ever. But
cop level has been unchanged for 10 years. We came into office, we reduced the size by 4,000 or 5,000, and we've maintained that for 10 years, and every year we brought down crime. What did I miss here? Our job is not to employ as many people and spend as much of the taxpayers' money as we can. Our job with the police department is to bring crime down. It is phenomenally well managed. It is so well staffed. We have the best police department in the world, from the top, from Kelly all the way to the most junior recruit in the next class of people, of cops that we're going to train and put on the streets. And would the city be safer if you put a cop on every corner? Yes, probably, but you can't afford that. It's like an airplane. You could design an airplane that never crashes, but it'd be so heavy it wouldn't get off the ground. So there's always some risks and everything. If crime were to spike, I would be the first one to say we should add more cops. Murder rate continues to come down. Yes, we had one bad week, July 4th week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was the same thing the year before, same thing the year before that, same thing. That one week, for a variety of reasons, is always a crazy week. We're right back down. We are 20%. We have this so far, we're a couple days short of 7 months through the year. We have so far 20% fewer murders this year than last. 20% fewer murders than the year before, 10% from the record year in 2009. I don't know what you're supposed to do. If you had more cops, would you get it down even more? I don't think so. But you keep your training going, keep providing the equipment, keep providing the management, keep recruiting young new cops to come in and be enthusiastic and that sort of thing. Pay your cops well, which we do. Make sure they're diverse. Deploy them where there is crime and not just where people scream the loudest. Scare the kids to not carry guns. You've just got to do that. You want who's in favor of that? Just ask the mother of the kid that was killed. I mean, come on. And just adding, spending more money is not something that we don't have the money. And incidentally,
well, those people never say how they would pay for that anyway.
I can tell you where we need more people. We need more firefighters. The trouble is, we've got this judge who says you can only use racial profiling to hire firefighters, and I've said this city is not going to do that. I am not going to do that. And so we are spending an enormous amount on overtime because we don't have enough firefighters. But if we're appealing, and I think we're going to win. If we win, then that's where we're going to have to spend some money, is getting more firefighters, because we haven't in a couple years hired new firefighters. And, you know, firefighting is a tough job. You see a big fire, the number of people.
You see that one in Brooklyn the other day.
But anytime it's a big fire, you go to the local hospital. They're not serious injuries in most cases. But this, you know.
Yeah, the fire guys are lined up.
Yeah, because it's a dangerous job. And thank goodness people are willing to do it. But the overtime, while they like the money, you don't want your firefighters so stretched that they get to the breaking point. You need more firefighters, and that's where we should spend the money.
You were talking about the economy. This is out of today's newspaper, New York Times Company.
Must be right then.
Well, it must be right. New York Times Company posts $88 million loss. Starbucks cuts outlook, citing global economic slowdown. Facebook shares plummet on earnings letdown. Amazon net revenues down 96% from a year ago.
Their profits, not their revenues.
Their profits are down. Yes, their profits are down 96%.
We're in a world where, you know, the pace of change is so dramatic. Just you go back and look at every one of these high tech companies that were touted as the next best thing, and they were going to take over the world. I mean, even Apple. When Steve Jobs died, everybody really said, you know, well, maybe the next guy can't do it. The next guy's a smart guy, and they seem to have new products coming out. But Apple doesn't. The iPhone is great. I have an iPhone, but it's not the fastest selling smartphone.
No, it's Samsung.
Samsung's. Yeah. I mean, there's a new. That's the good news, is that the products available to you keep getting better and cheaper and easier to use, and that's a trend. But the companies that make the old ones find it very difficult to catch up. And the history of every company, not every, but most, is you become lethargic, you protect what you have, the new stuff doesn't seem threatening, you don't want to jeopardize your existing products. Apple has, for example, they're doing the right thing. They announced they're going to have an iPhone 5. But that hurt sales in the iPhone 4.
Yeah.
Most companies wouldn't build the 5 because they didn't, as long as they were selling 4s. And by the time the 4s stopped, it'd be too late to catch up. Well, Apple's not making that mistake. But people are, you know, Apple stock is down. And Amazon, Jeff Bezos he is a very smart guy. He has built a heck of a company. And nobody thought that Amazon
His sales are actually up at Amazon.
Yeah,
He's
investing in the future. He really is running this company. He's one of the best business people I've ever met, and just done a spectacular job. But all these companies, you know, Facebook, they've got close to 1 billion users, but everybody thinks that their earnings aren't going to be what it was touted to be. The stock was up at like 48, and today it's at 24, and that's, 3 months later? Something like 2 months later? Zynga came out at 10, it's 3. You know, you go right down the list on every one of these companies. Some of those big old staid companies that nobody wants to talk about that trade at much lower price earnings multiples, they stay in business. They have diverse product lines. They have good management. And we used to joke about, you know, oh, they're big old. That's the way. That's the past. I'm not so sure that's the past. Yes, you'll buy more things on the internet. But, you know, take a look at a great corporate citizen here, Macy's. Macy's, the guy that runs it, Terry Lundgren, seems to know what he's doing, because they, every year, no matter what the fashion is, they keep chugging it out. They evolve, they change, they treat their employees well, they treat the cities, where, particularly New York, where they do business well. That's good business for them. And, you know, the internet isn't going to put Macy's out of business, at least not, I don't think it will. Macy's really provides a service, and there's lots of companies. But another company, Starbucks. Earnings all of a sudden down. You know, there's fashion. It comes and it just goes. John Gambling. Why has John Gambling survived three generations and everybody else in the business survives a year? Somebody should write a book. I've always thought that it would be a great book. Why do some people keep going? In the music business, Mick Jagger, I think Bloomberg Business Week has a story this month. People talk about the aging Supreme Court. The average age on the Supreme Court is something like 64. The average age of the Rolling Stones is in the 70s.
Please, exactly so.
Mick Jagger, Diana Ross, Aretha Franklin, you know, Joan Collins. These people go on for Paul McCartney. They go on Madonna.
Stevie Wonder.
As tastes change, they manage to adapt. And in the fashion business, you know, Ralph Lauren, Oscar de la Renta, Diane von Furstenberg, these people go, Hilfinger and Klein, they go on for generations in terms of their business. And the same thing, there are some in technology and in merchandising and that sort of thing. Do they do it and most can't do it?
I think it's quality. Quality of product, whatever that product happens to be, quality
sticking
of product.
Sticking to quality products, sticking to what they believe, leading from the front. You don't, if you wait for trends to change and then follow them, you're always going to be behind. You've got to have
front.
The courage to go out and to lead from the front and have the next best thing. Be avant-garde. Try the next the kind of painting. Try the next kind of music. That sort of thing. That's
leading from the front. I think I've heard that somewhere before.
Someplace.
All right. Stick around. We've got some folks on the line here. 800. I see we have one line open. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. We will get to you and the mayor straight ahead. But right here. Experience the legend in luxury, Route 1 North Edison, Ray Katina of Union, Route 22 West. Stop in today. Take advantage of all the terrific programs and lease specials. Mr. Mayor, we've got some callers here that would like to talk with you. We're going to start right here with Robert in Manhattan. Go ahead, Robert. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
The question I have to ask you is, do you believe that the NRA should lose its nonprofit status?
You know, to the extent that they espouse views, the First Amendment says they have a right to do so, and you can't have it both ways. So I would not, I assume, I hadn't really thought about that, but most issue advocacy groups like that are 501c3s, and if they qualify, we shouldn't take away the tax deduction based on not agreeing with their views. You can't have it come back to the Chick-fil-A. Can't have it both ways. And I don't agree with them. I think they're really hurting this country and hurting gun owners and not representing them well. But in terms of their right to stand up and say what they want, they have it. They should have it. We should protect it. And if it's normal to give 501c3 status to them, they should have it.
There you go. All right. Let's move along here. This is Mike in New Jersey. Go ahead, Michael. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Two quick points. Number one, the Bill Clinton assault weapons ban passed by a vote by Al Gore. That was a tie-breaking vote.
Yep, I remember.
A tie vote. Okay, that said, that ban was passed prior to the Supreme Court decision in the Heller case, which decided the Second Amendment as the right to keep and bear arms, which would mean that law was passed prior to the constitutional setting that has been done. So chances are a reinstatement of that would be unconstitutional.
I don't think so. Might be, but my argument is the president and Romney should both stand up, and they said Romney signed a bill in Massachusetts. I don't know if today would be held constitutional or not, but banning assault weapons, and he lauded it, and now he's on the other side, and the President Obama campaigned 3 years ago on he was going to try to get Congress to pass a law banning them, and I think they should stand up. It may be that they can't get it done, so maybe something else good comes out of it, some other ways to protect you and your children. you know, anybody that wants to buy an assault weapon, it's only, as I said before, to kill people. That's the only thing it can use these guns for. You don't go out, if you blasted a deer with an assault weapon, you'd have a lot of bullets in the in your venison when you tried to eat it. Come on.
Break a tooth.
Right. But you know, whether it would pass from a political point of view isn't the issue here to me. It's that the people who are want to lead this country for the next 4 years, starting January 1st, should tell us what they would do, how to stop the carnage and the 48,000 people that are going to get killed in the time that they're in office. And I think it's not unreasonable to ask them to do it. If it was a disease or some kind of an accident or something, we would be out there. They would be out there leading the charge. I'm the best one to do it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Well, this is about, you know, we're killing people.
All right, Emily, you're next. Right to the question, please.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I've been homeless for 22 months, and I just wanted to say that I did try to resolve my problem. I went to the Department of Consumer Affairs. I took the sightseeing exam in May to become a tour guide because I knew of a company that was hiring for $13.50 an hour.
What's your question, Emily?
I wanted to complain about the Department of Consumer Affairs.
Well, you know, the Department of Consumer Affairs tries to do a good job. If you want to get in touch with them or you have a complaint, call 311. That's an appropriate place to do it. Hopefully they haven't made any mistakes. They aren't perfect, but they're very well run, and they protect us in a lot of things.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it. The clock is just about ticked off to 9 o'clock here. Thank you very much, as always.
Looking forward to next week.
We will catch up with you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg.